Hey everybody, and welcome back to the Nintendo Wirecast. I'm TJ, I'm here with my buddy Amiibo Jason, and we're gonna talk some Nintendo stuff. It is Halloween by me in Taiwan, and for you, Jason, tomorrow's Halloween, right?
It is. It's the night before Halloween for me. When you're listening to this, I'm gonna do my best to get this podcast up tomorrow, so on Halloween. So this should be a spooky Halloween-themed episode. Imagine, if you will, TJ, spooky music playing right now over this podcast. Spooky Nintendo music. I'm not sure specifically what it's going to be, but you, the listener, are hearing it right now, and it's very spooky, isn't it?
It is. Oh, I can tell you that Luigi's Mansion has been playing not only through my head on a constant loop for the past 3 weeks, but literally through my iPhone, because my son is so obsessed with that soundtrack right now.
Yeah.
And the only soundtrack that I have on my phone is Smash Brothers. Now, that's 30 hours worth of music, so you can get through a lot of Nintendo songs, but there's three different covers of the Luigi's Mansion theme. So it's like those three songs on loop for 3 weeks straight.
I am so sorry.
I love the song, but it's like nonstop.
So are you picking up Luigi's Mansion 3 then?
I have already pre-ordered it. It's waiting there for me.
So it's out right now. Yeah. You're good to go.
It is out. I could go to the store and buy it.
Yeah.
But because I bought it from my American account, I won't actually be able to play it till noon tomorrow.
Got it. That's why you got to buy them on those Japanese accounts.
Yeah. You keep saying that, and I should do it. I know a lot of people are.
I'm actually bummed because, so I was supposed to get a digital copy of the game. I had a Best Buy gift card. So I went to Best Buy to buy Nintendo eShop gift cards. And I find out you can't buy gift cards with gift cards. So I had to buy a physical copy. So I pick it up tomorrow. It is what it is. But I'm excited for the game. I think it's going to be great. And I'm not spoiling anything at this point because the episode is probably out already. But you have this amazing Luigi's Mansion-themed custom conquest that is more than likely on our YouTube channel right now unless something goes awry.
Yeah, it's actually, in typical TJ fashion, I've spent the last week of my life sidelining all of my other projects because I just keep getting deeper and deeper in this Halloween-themed Luigi's Mansion Custom Conquest episode. And some of it's because I got a little bit derailed with the custom female Robin episode last time, and I almost completely scrapped this Luigi's Mansion episode because I just didn't think I had enough time to do it with all my other responsibilities. But I just, I was like, I got to do it.
I'm pretty thrilled, though, that you didn't. One thing I think you and I both have realized, our YouTube channel audience loves Mario. Anything having to do with Mario is just perfect for our channel. So,
and I do love me some Mario for sure, but I have to say I'm a lot more excited about Luigi's Mansion than some of the other 3D Mario titles. I think something about it is just so refreshing
because it's different.
There's nothing else like it. And the first Luigi's Mansion was so surprisingly short to me. Like I almost did it in a single sitting, I think.
Yeah.
But it felt so satisfying. It felt like such a complete experience that I didn't feel like I got cheated at all.
Yeah.
And it's one of the only examples of, maybe it's the only example I could think of a game that combines diegetic and non-diegetic music, where like you have the typical score going on in the background, and then you have Luigi actually singing to the score as it's going. That just, like, the charm factor was through the roof when that happened. And I'm like, okay, yeah, I'm totally in on this
now,
game.
Now, did you play it all the way back on the GameCube or on 3DS? I played it all the way back.
I bought it the day it came out. That was a launch title for the GameCube.
Yeah.
Yep.
So
I did not get the first one I ever played. Really?
I had Monkey Ball as my launch title, not Luigi's Mansion.
You chose poorly, son.
It wasn't my purchase, unfortunately. It was a gift.
You're a little bit younger than me.
Just barely. But I'm excited. I mean, I loved Luigi's Mansion 2 on the 3DS. I have Luigi's Mansion on 3DS too. I started it, never finished, but I'm going to get to that point at some point. I'm not guessing I'm going to need to like play the previous two like to completion to get the most out of three. It's not like this story-driven RPG. I think I can figure out what's going on. Luigi gets himself in some sort of ghost trouble for a third time. But I'm excited. It's going to be a fun game, for sure.
You know, I did not find myself as sucked into the second one.
Yeah.
So I did buy Dark Moon, and I played it for quite a bit, but I just kind of lost interest and fell off.
Yeah.
My son, who's obsessed with the soundtrack, has been playing it a lot. He plays games his own way. He doesn't really have any kind of objective-based gaming. He just finds something that he enjoys doing within the game. And Luigi's Mansion's great for that because it has all these kinds of discovery opportunities.
Yeah.
But I would find myself having long gaps between playing, and then when I would go back, I would have no idea where I was, and I was lost, and it wasn't fun. But there were moments of that game that I found super riveting, and in some ways is a little bit scarier than the first game.
Oh, I can totally see that.
But eventually, I was just like, this is going to have to, unfortunately, go into the gaming graveyard with Undertale, Okami, and Dark Souls. Like, games that I started, got pretty far in, and just will never be able to finish just because of time.
No, I feel you. I feel the same way about a lot of games. I'm nervous, actually, because I'm very, very close to beating Dragon Quest XI, which is, I can't say enough positive things about this game. It is incredibly good. So if you're an RPG fan, you need to pick it up. Will I have it beat by tomorrow? No. I'm nervous if I pick up Luigi's Mansion 3, get obsessed with it, and play it, I might never go back to finish 11, even though I think I'm like 5 to 10 hours away from beating it, which is, it seems like a lot. That's the entire length of Luigi's Mansion 3, probably. But it's very small when you're looking at like a massive JRPG. So I don't want to get to that point where I'm not going to finish it, so I'm going to make a very, very hard decision tomorrow if I'm going to beat Dragon Quest first, or if I'm going to put it aside, maybe try to juggle both at the same time. So it's going to be a challenge.
Now, Luigi's Mansion 3 has no amiibo support, right?
None.
But the 3DS remake of the first one does.
It does, yeah, it does. I can't remember the specifics about it, though.
I know that there's only 4 amiibo that are compatible: Mario, Toad, Luigi, and Boo.
Yeah.
They all do something. Mario turns your poison mushrooms into like healthy mushrooms.
Sure.
And they get your power back. I don't remember what the other ones do. One of them reveals the locations of the Boos on the map.
Oh, okay. That makes sense.
And it's pretty cool, but it's interesting that out of all of them, only one of them actually have amiibo.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, it's just, I know we talked about this last week. I just have to say it again. I'm still bummed that amiibo are no longer, I mean, amiibo were afterthoughts for most games, I would say, pretty much since they came out, with the exception of Smash. That's definitely not an afterthought.
Right.
But a lot of it, it's just like, tap the amiibo and get an item, or tap the amiibo and get a costume. Costumes were cool, so I don't even want to compare like Mario Maker's amiibo functionality to, say, Luigi's Mansion that turns your mushrooms into a different kind of mushroom.
Right.
But we're to the point now where we're not even getting the afterthoughts, we're just getting the omissions, with the exception of Link's Awakening. So it makes me
sad. And even that's kind of just like some add-on feature that could have just as easily been unlocked in the game through some other means.
There was no need for it whatsoever. I mean, I tapped it in just to see what it did, and I never tapped it in again. Like, I had no desire, I had no need to tap in that Link amiibo. And I'm guessing most people that bought it, it's up on their shelf, and that's where it's going to remain for all eternity.
Yeah, mine's sitting right there, too.
And it looks,
for those of you who are watching this,
it looks darn good there, too. So there's no problem with that. But I'd love to see something, just some functionality with Luigi's Mansion 3 would have been a great opportunity to use a Luigi amiibo, or even like do a Poltergust Luigi amiibo, which I would have loved, an EGAT amiibo.
Right. See, here's where I get those strong inspirations for Custom Conquest, is you have these big titles launching, like Mario Maker comes out. I want Mario and Luigi in the construction outfit. And you have the Luigi's Mansion come out. And who doesn't want to have some kind of Luigi's Mansion themed amiibo? The Poltergust Luigi Luigi. So it's fun for me to be able to do that.
That would have been great.
Yeah, it would have been great.
Who would have thought of that?
I don't know.
Nobody.
Everybody. That's what's so strange about it, is it's obvious. And it would have, I know people would have bought it. I guess maybe it's because they don't have a way to justify its existence other than as a collectible, and Nintendo isn't really wanting to go back to the exclusive toy days. They still want to have some sort of connection to their games, I suppose.
Yeah. But who knows? I don't want to see it die. If you want more on our thoughts about Amiibo, and you haven't seen it yet, listen to our last episode, or we have the entire segment up on YouTube. So we talk about this at length. So,
yes, we very easily digress into,
and I could easily do it
Amiibo
again.
Amiibo laments. I see us slipping down that path.
Yeah. I never met somebody as obsessed with Amiibo as me until I met you. So I think we are possibly the biggest Amiibo fans on the planet.
It could be.
It could be.
Very well could
it's
be.
It's got to be close. But it is Halloween.
Challenge us.
Yes, please do. I've seen some pretty darn amazing collections out there. So I don't think it's a bad idea to challenge them, but I think we're going to lose. Maybe I would lose. I don't know if you're going to lose. So it is.
To a fight?
No, not to a fight. To an Amiibo showdown.
I'm tough to beat. I think I might have more unique Amiibo than anybody in the world.
Oh, from a custom standpoint, yeah, I think that's
accurate. Yeah, because I've got like 100 Amiibo head start on the most that anybody could ever have.
That's pretty crazy. I have a couple of your customs prolific, too.
There's more prolific customizers out there than me, but they are good enough to be able to sell theirs.
Yeah. You could easily sell yours. You could easily sell yours.
I don't have the ability to make a good custom and do it efficiently enough to be able to sell.
You're just a tad modest. You could do it. I don't know if the demand is there like it used to be anymore. Like customizers like Gonda Chris,
God tier.
She was churning them out like nobody's business, but we've mentioned this before too. It's just Amiibo don't have that prolific status anymore. It's just they're cool, and the customs she makes, she did some Pokemon Sword and Shield customs that are just out of this world.
I saw those. Those are fantastic.
But you're not seeing like Kotaku and IGN like doing profiles on custom Amiibo anymore like they were every week back in the day.
Right. So I'm just happy that there's enough people on the Nintendo Wire YouTube channel to share the excitement about custom Amiibo that I am. I thought I would just be spinning my wheels with Custom Conquest Showcase.
I mean, people care. People... I mean, there's over 100,000 views on your last two episodes combined. So, I mean, it's there. People want this kind of content. So I don't think it's totally dead. It's just not 2015 level hype anymore. I mean, but what is, really? I mean, the Wii U was at the height of its popularity. I mean, that turned out great.
Yeah, the height of the Wii U's popularity is not saying much.
Nah, probably not. But it had some darn good games. I could go off on a tangent on that.
The best games of any system ever made, bar none. I don't think there has been a system with a better library of first-party games than the Wii U. The Switch is not quite there yet.
Yeah, well... I don't know. That's...
Well, if you subtract all of the Wii U titles...
Yeah, that's true.
Then Wii U has it totally crushed.
Except Mario Odyssey, the best Mario.
And for those of you guys who are not familiar with my lukewarm feelings about Mario Odyssey, I think Jason's partly saying that in jest because he knows that I really have no... affinity for that game. It's not accurate to say I hate it because I don't. I just am so tepid about it. I'm so ambivalent. I played the first 15 hours just completely bored, and I was also like confused why I was bored. Like, what is it about this game that's just not grabbing me? And I don't really know what the answer is. I collected 900 Koroks and I was excited every single time I heard yaha, but.
Yeah,
finding a power moon I found to be just so tedious and so obnoxious.
Not a fan of platformers.
I love platformers, but I guess maybe not 3D platformers. I played Mario 3D World from zero to completion three times because my kids and my wife kept resetting it and we kept playing through it and having fun. And it's just a casual little thing that we don't take too seriously. And before I knew it, like we did everything. We unlocked every flag with every character, every star, every world, every challenge. And it was fun to me, but there's something about Mario Odyssey that I guess the core conceit is something that I just couldn't get behind. I'm not really into that whole capture mechanic. It kind of bugged me.
Yeah.
It came at the sacrifice of some power-ups that I really enjoyed. So, yeah, I could throw fireballs, but I had to turn into a fire... what are they, those guys called? Not fire troopas.
No, it's
Fire bro.
Yeah,
fire
like bro. the hammer bro dudes. Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't know. I guess I'm probably prickling a lot of people's nerves with
a little bit. I feel like we have
people
to have
get
like
really
a,
mad.
Like
people
a
get
controversial
really mad when...
opinion episode at some point.
This is totally my most controversial. Anytime I ever say anything disparaging about Mario Odyssey, people are like, "You just don't know games. You know nothing."
It's like me saying I hate Fire Emblem, which I do. I do not care for Fire Emblem in any capacity. I picked up Three Houses. I played it for 25 minutes, and I'm like, I do not like this game at all. In fact, I would say I hate this game.
What is it about it that makes you turn you off so much?
Let me play the game. Like, and I know it's like it's I'm an RPG player, so it's different too because I should like that story-driven content, but I played more than 25 minutes, so I'll be fair. Nothing happened for so long. Like, I could barely move around. I think it took me over an hour and a half to get to a first battle. And by that point, I'm like, well, there's my gaming session. I'm done for the day. Like, I don't have time to sit down and play 6 hours of gaming straight. It's one of the reasons why I'm still playing Dragon Quest XI. I'm playing for 45 minutes at a time. Because that's my capacity. I work. I'm a dad. I'm doing this 60-day Ring Fit challenge. And it's like I lay in bed at 10 o'clock. And I'm like, well, got to be to sleep by 11. So 45 minutes of Dragon Quest. If I can get in that, I'm happy.
I'm playing nothing but Mario Kart Tour.
I'm doing that too.
I've done a complete reversal on that game, where at first I found the Gold Pass to be the most egregious and offensive money-grabbing scheme that I've ever seen in a game. And I just had to kind of do a mental paradigm shift where now I'm like, wait a second. It's continuing to provide new content. And it's continuing to offer new challenges. Yep. So in some ways, it's one of the best Mario Kart games ever made. I know I've heard a lot of people have criticized the controls, but I actually think that the controls are more intuitive than any other Mario Kart game. I would go so far as to say it is the best Mario Kart game ever made, Double Dash notwithstanding. let's not get crazy here.
I disagree with you on many levels on that. I think it is a good Mario Kart game. I don't think it is. It is a Mario Kart game with gacha mechanics specifically in mind. Like, there are certain levels where it's like, get 11,000 points. And you're not getting 11,000 points unless you have a tier 3 driver, a tier 3 cart, and a tier 3 parasol.
Yeah, that's definitely true. I've been figuring out how to do that, though, and that's without spending money, except for the Gold Pass, which I haven't spent any money on yet because I'm still in my 2-week free trial. But I'm going to let it go through and hang on to it. If I think of it like... not I'm getting raked over the coals with this $5 ongoing charge, but it's games as a service. So people have been doing this for decades. I never have. My brother's been playing World of Warcraft. He's been paying some monthly stipend to Blizzard for over a decade. I've never gamed like that. I buy my game and that's it, and I play it until I'm done with it and end of story. But to be able to continue to pay for a game, but yet, at the same time, that game is continuing to develop new content. It's an adjustment. Maybe I'm just behind the times there. But I think for the amount that I'm playing it right now, it's definitely worth that $5 buy-in to be able to access more of the content and be able to experience more of the game in the short little bursts of time that I have to play.
The courses are fun. I have no issue with the game itself. I'm playing it a lot. I wouldn't call it, like, I would say Mario Kart 8 Deluxe is still my favorite by far. Even though I think that's missing Waluigi Pinball, which is just, I have no idea how that can happen. Best course ever. So I am happy that Mario Kart Tour has that too. But man, I don't want to get...
I'm actually thinking it might ruin me for a standard Mario Kart, because a regular Mario Kart game has never really had the pull. It doesn't have that reason for me to keep coming back.
Yeah.
But with this game, I'm constantly wanting to check the shop to see if I have new characters or new vehicles or gliders that will help me achieve better scores in my races. There are objectives that I'm trying to complete. No other Mario Kart game has had objectives. So I'm enjoying a multitude of different angles with it. I like racing, yeah. and I like trying to beat all the other racers. That is, so far, equal to every other Mario Kart game out there. But this is adding on to it all those other layers.
Yeah. Part of me is concerned, how are they going to address that going forward, that their mobile game has significantly more characters than their home console release, almost making it look inferior, even though I don't think it's ever going to be to a point where it's inferior. However, if we ever get to a point where it's like you have this Luigi's Mansion King Boo in this game, and why can't I have it in this game? It makes me feel like it's either A, they're going to just say, listen, it's never going to happen, or B, they're just going to have to up their content dramatically. I mean, these character models are gorgeous on the mobile phones, and my daughter plays it on her iPad, and it looks great on the big screen. So I feel like maybe now they can easily port that over to the Switch. I mean, they have the character models, they have the carts, they have the parasols. I mean, what do you really have to do to transfer those models over to the home console?
Yeah, it does make one wonder what the angle is going to be when they do another game, because I can't see them implementing a lot of the features that are on the phone to the console. And the only real drawback that I can see is that it's not a shared experience in Tour.
Yeah.
You can't really do couch co-op. You can't play with your friends. You can't even yet play online. I don't know if that'll ever happen. But I appreciate that it's super fast. If I want to play, there's no game faster. I turn it on and I'm racing in like 15 seconds.
Yep.
So it's literally playing at my speed. No pun intended. My speed is 200cc for the record. So we've talked about Mario Kart. Mario Kart Tour for me is an ongoing saga.
Yeah, it's like Ring Fit with me. Like, we could easily go off on tangents every episode, but it's going to get really boring after a while. Oh, man.
So, hey, how come episode 4 or 5 sounds exactly like episode 2 and 3?
Because it is. We just copy-pasted the segments.
Yeah, we're still excited about the stuff that we were excited about then. It hasn't worn off.
But we can easily transition it, because Mario Kart Tour has the spooky Halloween theme. And now it is Halloween, so we can talk about some spooky Halloween-themed Nintendo games. And there are a plenty of those. I mean, Nintendo is always been kind of known as the squeaky clean kind of company when it comes to at least their first-party content. But it wasn't, not always like so squeaky clean. I mean, they progressed and they evolved and they made some pretty interesting content. But I kind of wanted to talk a bit about you growing up. Like, you had the NES growing up, is that right?
Correct.
Okay. So I was in the same boat, except I was incredibly young. I was about 4 or 5. I was, technically, the NES came out the year I was born, but I had an NES when I was like 4 or 5. So I had the classics. I had Mario, I had Ninja Turtles, I had Battletoads, games like that. But the NES was littered with horror games, like games for hard R-rated movies. And I'm not just talking about like Die Hard and Rambo and Alien, which all had NES games, by the way. But there were games based on like slasher horror films. They had Friday the 13th, A Nightmare on Elm Street, Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. Maniac Mansion was a port of a PC game back in the day that was pretty violent too. I mean, it's kind of funny. I mean, Maniac Mansion, if you've never played it, it's more like a kind of horror comedy adventure title. There was even like these bootleg games. One was called Chiller I think you had a light gun with that game, if I remember correctly, but it was a gory, gory NES game. Like, it was crazy gory. So I think it's kind of funny that we look back at this like console that was, I don't know, it had this squeaky clean image, but then you had like Freddy Krueger on the front of a box, like with his knife hands sticking out. And it's like, here you go, kids, play this game.
I think it's really two factors that contribute to that. One, gaming was not a universally accepted activity. It was still kind of an underground niche hobby.
Yeah.
And also, the 8-bit graphics did not allow for something gratuitous. So you could have your blood splats are what, like, little red pixels appear on the screen.
If you have a chance, you have to check out a video of the game Chiller. It was pretty darn gory, and not just like 8-bit pixelated gory. Like, it was gory. I'm gonna give you the opportunity to check that out at some point. It's pretty messed up. There's like a scene. There's this torture chamber. There's like decapitated bodies and like puddles of blood and a box full of body parts. You can tell why this game never got an official release on the NES. This was like one of the bootleg games. But
I see.
It was pretty crazy for sure.
Like the best graphic fidelity that I've ever seen on an NES game that I can think of is actually based on another horror movie, Gremlins 2, The New Batch.
Yeah, yeah.
Like that game, what they achieved with 8-bit pixels were so impressive at the time. And I played that game to death.
Yeah.
It's probably my favorite NES game, if I had to say. That was at a time when licensed games could actually be really good.
Yeah.
And they weren't just cheap cash grabs. Now, granted, those were there. But a lot of the time, they were implementing really fun play mechanics and just kind of shoehorning in some kind of movie license.
Yeah.
But Gremlins 2 that's definitely one of the standout games of the NES.
I've never played it. I mean, you're selling it, so I have to try it.
It's absurd. Like, you're playing against Gizmo, and yeah. It's kind of a top-down view, like a Legend of Zelda,
sure.
Link to the Past. You're walking around throwing an infinite supply of tomatoes, weirdly. But you can also upgrade, and there are a lot of different points in the game that reference specific moments in the movie.
Yeah.
So if you're familiar with the movie and you're playing through the game, there's a lot of pretty cool callbacks. And they do make some adjustments and modifications, as games are wont to do when it comes to adapting other forms of media. But it was fun. And I had to have played at least 100 or 200 times through. It's only five worlds.
Okay.
And in the NES days, you would have to play a game in a single sitting. Otherwise, you couldn't beat it because there was no saving anything except for Zelda. So,
or you had that complicated like 16 to 18 digit password that games love to do.
Punch out. Yeah. And I would always mess it up. There was,
oh, for sure.
I don't know. As a kid, maybe I was too much of a dum-dum. Maybe I'm still too much of a dum-dum for that kind of that kind of passwords or progress restoration. But it was certainly something I couldn't do as a kid.
Yeah. I mean, there are some pretty amazing horror games on the NES, too. One that we never got in the U.S. Was a game called Sweet Home. Have you ever heard of Sweet Home?
I have not.
So it was made by Capcom, and Sweet Home was the original survival horror Resident Evil type game. In fact, the first Resident Evil on PlayStation 1 was supposed to be a sequel to Sweet Home.
Oh.
But they obviously changed the name. In Japan, it was to Biohazard. But yeah, Sweet Home, it's really interesting. You're in this mansion, and terrible things are happening. And the graphics were absolutely phenomenal. Did you have a chance to see the Luigi's Mansion demake that we did?
Yeah, I did.
Okay, so the battle mechanics that we did in that demake were kind of based on Sweet Home, where it goes to like this first-person view, and you have to like attack the enemy that way. But Sweet Home was an absolutely fantastic game. I think there are some fan translations of that game that you can get like a ROM for. But if you've never checked it out, it's kind of a really cool piece of gaming history. And it's cool that it's on the NES, especially with its Resident Evil kind of like tie-in.
I was wondering what the inspiration for that Boo battle was, because I was really curious to see how you were going to achieve an 8-bit version of Luigi sucking up these ghosts. But
did you like the Kirby sound effect that was added to that?
I did.
Yeah, Tom Brown is amazing. He is a jack of all trades when it comes to pixel art.
I immediately accepted it as a sucking sound, but I didn't immediately recognize it as Kirby. And then I looked at the comment section, and there was a lot of people who wanted to call that out.
Oh, for sure. I mean, it sticks out like a sore thumb. But
it's a quintessential sucking sound. It's the most recognizable video game sucking sound that there is.
It definitely is. And there's not a lot of other ways that you can convey a sucking sound without that sound. So
right.
What are you going to do?
And Kirby's sound sounds like a vacuum.
Yeah.
I'm sure that's not an accident.
So I'm thinking that on the NES and the Super NES, Nintendo really didn't go the horror route from a first-party perspective. It was all third-party. Right. Even on the N64. Most famous is
probably the Castlevania series, which that's probably the first horror game that I ever played, and I was familiar with all of the bad guys from the Universal Monsters series.
Yeah.
So you pretty much check off every single box with just the first Castlevania game. And even though Simon's Quest was almost unbeatable for a kid.
Yeah.
It was impossibly difficult. The music was so good and the atmosphere was so good that I would find myself just walking around until I died. It was definitely scarier. Like they took it a notch further, because it wasn't just you needed to kill all these monsters. You needed to find Dracula's scattered remains. And that's pretty morbid. Like you have to get his nail, his eyeball, I think. I don't remember exactly what all the body parts were, but he's finding dismembered pieces of a body. That's I don't know if they still do that kind of stuff in games. Maybe they do. They're just not the games I play.
If I remember correctly, Simon's Quest suffered from the kind of odd Nintendo of America censorship, where any religious symbolism they would have to completely erase. So if you're walking through a graveyard and there was like a cross, like on a gravestone, the cross would have to be taken off. Nintendo was super touchy about offending the very conservative mothers of the time.
Yet, perplexingly, to present day, the original Link shield still has the Christian cross on it.
Yes, it does. I don't know. I mean, even in the artwork, it's undisputable. That's exactly what it is. But they were very, very picky with the content that came over to the U.S. Japan had more games where they could get away with, there was a couple games that had, pentagrams and, obviously, Satan themes. Like, it's a video game. You beat the bad guy, and sometimes the bad guy's the devil. But, yeah, Nintendo of America was super, super cautious when it came to that stuff. But yeah, oddly enough, I mean, when we move past the N64, because Nintendo had nothing even remotely adult on the N64 from a first-party perspective. I mean, there's adult games on the console. Not many of them are great, with the exception of Conker's Bad Fur Day, which is, just the best.
What a shocking game that was. That
so good. On every level, it's so good. I'm not sure if I mentioned this or not at any point, but... for my birthday this year, my mother-in-law got me a Conker plush from, the original run. And these things are rare as heck.
I think you mentioned that in the last episode.
Was it the last episode? Oh, man.
I think so.
I'm staring at him right now. He's beautiful. And I have to mention it every time because, God, I love it. But yeah, we moved past the N64 and onto the GameCube. And then Nintendo just decides to be like, F it. We're going to come out with a creepy, psychological, gory game called Eternal Darkness, Sanctity's Requiem. Was that what it was called?
Sanity's Requiem.
Sanity's Requiem, okay. Which I picked up the day it came out. I was a teenager when that game came out, and I was a Nintendo fanboy at that point. And I'm like, Nintendo is doing a violent game. I remember the headline in Game Informer, and it said, Nintendo does violence, which... it's a really stupid headline, but that stuck with me because it's like Nintendo is going the edgy adult way with this game. And I know you've played it too.
Yeah, a lot, actually.
Eternal Darkness, I'm going to let you have some time on this topic too, but I wanted to bring up Eternal Darkness today because it's kind of like Nintendo's one and done, gory horror fest of a title, unless I'm forgetting something completely. Bayonetta, I guess, but that's a combination of Sega. I think Did was it Silicon Knights that did Eternal Darkness? Because I know it was like a joint effort. Nintendo published it.
I don't remember who the other party was, but that game I bought sight unseen. I had reached a point by the GameCube era where if Nintendo published it, I just bought it. Yeah. I had not seen a review. I had not heard anything about it. I didn't even know it was a horror game. I didn't know anything about it. And so once I started playing it and I realized the type of game that it was, I started to question whether or not I was actually going to be able to play it. That's not a genre that appeals to me.
Sure.
I don't have anything against horror games. I would just rather play some kind of fun adventure.
Sure.
I don't like getting scared so bad that I wet myself isn't exactly what I consider to be a fun recreational activity.
Yeah.
But this game did things with story that just completely blew my mind. Now, the dialogue in the beginning is a little contrived, and they need to get the character onto this quest. So
yeah.
I guess it's somewhat forgivable. They introduce characters that ultimately don't have any relevancy to the story, and we never see them again, but they were just kind of trying to get the protagonist to the inciting incident.
Yeah.
But so I start to acclimate myself to this character, Alex, this female who's grandpa had just recently passed away, and she's inheriting his mansion, and his mansion is terrifying. And then very early on, you get transported to ancient Rome, and you're then assuming the identity of, I think, a legionnaire or a centurion, and I'm not exactly sure. And then they start to continue with that motif where every chapter or so, you're changing the character that you're playing as at a different point in history, and you're revisiting locations from the past and seeing how they evolved over the centuries. And that aspect of the game just captivated me. I thought it was so fascinating.
A pretty massive Assassin's Creed vibe to it. I think this game predated Assassin's Creed, too.
It definitely did, right?
But there was definitely this Assassin's Creed vibe to it. But the thing that sold it for me was, obviously, Eternal Darkness, Sanity's Requiem. The sanity portion of Eternal Darkness was kind of its selling point, where you had a sanity meter and you had to keep yourself grounded in reality when you're in these story segments of the game. And as that meter goes down, the game starts to mess with you in ways that, like, you could walk through a door and your head's gone. And it's like blood popping out of your head, or, you know, where your head should be. But you can still walk around. And then it starts messing with you where it will invert the controls and you can't do something and you can't walk. And then it will turn your game off. It won't really turn your game off, but it'll act like it turned off your game. It'll act like it's wiping your memory card, kind of Psycho Mantis with Metal Gear Solid there to a certain degree. I think it did that. Part of me is wondering now if I'm thinking of Metal Gear.
I'm remembering all of those things. And also it would bring the volume down of the game, like somebody was operating the controller over your shoulder, and it would have flies appear on the screen. I actually physically got up to go swat a fly that was on the screen on more than one occasion, thinking that it was a legitimate fly, and the volume thing freaked me out. My brother has this story that he keeps telling people all the time, where I woke him up in the middle of the night when he was in high school because I wanted to play the game, but I was too scared to play it alone. It's true. I thought that the game was amazing, but there was something about playing it alone at night in the dark that I just didn't have the constitution for.
It's one of these games that, it's one of these franchises. Nintendo keeps renewing the IP, so they own it. Obviously, I think they do that with all of their IPs in case they ever want to do something with it. I would love another Eternal Darkness game. I would love it if Nintendo would go back to the vaults, and even if they just... On the Switch, there needs to be some sort of, like, GameCube virtual console at this point, which I never think it's going to happen, but who knows. But even getting it in that respect, I'd be happy. I actually just picked up a GameCube at, like, a flea market and hooked it up to my HDTV with one of these cheap HDMI cables, and I might pick it up again just to try it. I have incredibly fond memories as a kid playing it. I remember being creeped out. I remember just being shocked at seeing an M-rated logo with a Nintendo logo right next to it. and it was just really good fun. So if you have ever wanted to play a game that kind of makes you go crazy or think you're going crazy, you have to try this one out. A lot of you might be way too young to remember it, but if you have the means of playing it on GameCube or emulation, feel free. It's an absolutely fantastic game.
And the combat system was super cool. You could target specific parts of the, like, the bodies of
you could take, like, their enemies. Limbs off, too, I thought.
Yeah, yeah. You could, like, attack arms or heads, and different enemies were susceptible to different types of attacks.
Yeah.
And you had such a vast arsenal of blades and firearms. And the acting of some of these characters, or these actors, is phenomenal.
If I remember with the Rome scene, I think the game actually started off in... Roman? What language is that?
Latin.
Latin. This is where you can tell Amiibo Jason's not as educated in this subject as he should be. If I remember correctly, I think they actually started off in that language, and then it kind of progresses with, like, it distorts,
yeah, you're right,
and then goes into English.
Yeah.
But you could tell they cared about this story. This was not a Resident Evil like, Jill, you are the master of unlocking. Take this lockpick. I butchered the line, but they cared about everything they were doing with this,
oh,
from the
yeah.
graphics to the hallucinations to the voice acting. I mean, it's just a great game.
One of the characters that's a ancestor of the main character has this journal, and you're collecting entries to the journal. And when you read them, the voice actor for that character reads them, so he's
yeah.
essentially like performing them. So they're long monologues, and they are
almost Shakespearean
so,
to a certain
so
degree.
Good. Oh, I could not believe that. I sat there just thinking to myself how impressed I was with the performance. And it almost broke the suspension of disbelief because
yeah.
of how impressed I was. So that game really hit the mark on a number of different levels. And it had a very H.P. Lovecraftian kind
of... Oh, for sure.
These alien deities that are... I'm making it sound like the fourth Indiana Jones movie, but it was nothing like that. And it even has this complex cosmic rock, paper, scissors mechanic where you choose your own destiny
yeah.
very early on in the game, which I suppose deity you're going to align with, and that affects your aptitude either as a warrior, a scholar, or a magician.
Yeah.
And each one of them is like the typical weapons triangle. So
yeah.
you're Pokemon fire, water, and grass mechanic. So that it changes the way that the game is played. I accidentally picked the most challenging one the first time.
Yeah.
Because my favorite color is red, and so I was like, I'm gonna go with the red one. but that means all of the enemies are way stronger. So it's like, oh, okay. And they even have like a secret fourth one. So
yeah.
I think that game's worth going back to. I wonder if the controls would be tolerable for me. At the time, I thought that they were super good. I could
yeah.
never play Resident Evil, even Resident Evil 4, which a lot of people praise as being the way in for people who had a hard time with the controls of Resident Evil 2.
Yeah.
I couldn't play it. And people even consider the GameCube version of Resident Evil 4 to be one of the best of the entire series. The controls alone were a barrier of entry for me, but I loved the controls of Eternal Darkness. I even kind of wished that Zelda, Ocarina of Time, could have been more like that game. Because
yeah.
you had the Z targeting that Ocarina of Time had, but by being able to target specific areas of the enemies, it had a lot more nuance to it than your typical slashing adventure game.
Oh, I totally see that too. So I guess at this point too, would you consider Eternal Darkness to be your favorite horror game?
Bar none, without
no obviously you're not a big fan of the genre, so I don't know what your
and
your
it depends.
Level
like,
of...
would you consider like Castlevania IV a horror game?
I guess it's complicated. I mean, it has horror aspects, but I guess not like horror in the term. I would call it more like an action adventure game than a horror game.
Right. And I guess the type of game too, because I guess Castlevania would have to fall into the horror genre, but it's a horror side-scrolling platformer where Eternal Darkness is a psychological horror.
Yeah.
And so it automatically hits you deeper, and it demands more of you mentally and emotionally.
Yeah.
And that it did really challenge me. And I thought a lot about that game, not only while I was playing it, but even to present day. I haven't played the game in, I don't know, 15 years.
Yeah. But it's all coming back to you now, isn't it?
I remember it. I thought about it when I was doing the Custom Conquest Halloween special. So there's just a quick shout out acknowledging that game's status as being one of the scariest experiences of my life. But I didn't get too deep into it.
So I feel like, so for me, I mean, from a horror perspective, the gore has never really been something that's creeped me out. I like the psychological stuff. I like the stuff that just unsettles you. I'll give you an example. It's not a Nintendo game, but the game PT, which was a playable teaser for the now completely debunked Silent Hills game that Del Toro and Kojima were going to be making together before Konami decided to mess up their entire business model and their entire company, in my opinion. I have lots of thoughts on Konami right now, even though I'm sure they're your boys with Castlevania. But
they're my boys, yeah.
Which reminds me, I mean, there's a Castlevania mobile game either out or coming out that's a gacha game, but it's a full-fledged Castlevania. We're going to have to talk about that at some point. But I digress. PT was one of the creepiest experiences I've ever had. They took the PS4, they took everything that the PS4 did well. They had use of the microphone. They had use of the little touch panel on the controller. It was the creepiest experience I ever had playing a game, bar none. It was terrifying. I played it in my basement. I was a grown man when this came out, obviously. I played it in my basement, completely pitch black, 5.1 surround sound, and just no distractions, and it was perfect. It was going to be the perfect game, and it bugs me that it was just completely shot. So those are the kinds of horror games I like. It's one of the reasons I like Eternal Darkness. It's not your typical, like, oh my god, there's a slasher coming, or a zombie. I mean, it's all of that's been done. So I'm happy Nintendo, when they did their one-and-done approach to survival horror, that they made such a impactful game, one that just really sticks with you. So
yeah. Every one of the different characters, you just play as so many different personalities, and every one of them was so fully fleshed out. And each one of them played a key. I love this game. Each one played such a key aspect in the culmination of the story that it made me think a lot about things like in my own life. If one of my ancestors would have made one different decision, I might have never even been born.
Butterfly effect, man.
Yeah, that game really leans heavy into the butterfly effect. And depending on how you play and choices you make and artifacts that you find, it can impact and affect your access to certain paths later in the game.
Yeah.
And I probably did like 8 playthroughs of that because I really wanted to experience everything. It really sucked me
in. I only did one, so now you're making me feel really bad. I mean, I'm going to have to pick this game up on eBay right now.
Go back.
I do not have a copy at the moment, but it's expensive now. I think it's like a $50 or $60 game, if not more. I'm going to have to check. Otherwise, I might have to fire up Dolphin, which I probably shouldn't say.
I still have my copy back in Illinois, but I don't have a television that can still play the GameCube.
You can pick up...
Oh, the Wii U. The Wii U can play it.
No. I think the Wii can.
No, I'm sorry. The Wii. Every time I say Wii, the U slips out.
I picked up a Hyperkin HDMI cable, and then I did a review on the... I can't even remember the company, which sucks. I love the product. They had one out for the N64 that let you upscale it to 480p with an HDMI cable, and they also make one for GameCube, too. So there's a lot of options for GameCube on modern TVs, even though I feel like your best bet is probably component cables with the Nintendo Wii. I mean, that's going to be your cheapest option. But
yeah.
Yeah, I mean, horror stuff is pretty cool. I mean, Nintendo shies away from it for the most part. What I would love to see would be a hard M-rated Metroid Prime, like full-fledged, like make it... Metroid is obviously an homage to the movie Alien. It is a very... It's survival to a certain degree. I wouldn't necessarily call it horror, but the isolation that the original Metroid had, even the Metroid Prime games, very, very reminiscent to the Alien franchise, and I'd like to see it even go a step further, just like really bump that horror level up, because I feel like it's this close to being a horror game without actually being a horror game. Will Nintendo ever do that? I'm sure they won't. But who knows? I think that would be their best IP to do it with, unless they decide to make a new Eternal Darkness. But
I don't know that they wouldn't. I actually think that that's a distinct possibility. I'm not saying that they are, and neither do I predict that they will, but I could see that happening. Like you said, if there was going to be one that they would do it with, then yeah, that would be the one. And Metroid historically has not really been a big money-making franchise for Nintendo, even though it does have a fan following.
Yeah.
I think more in the West than in Japan.
Part of me feels like Metroid's going to get pushed back to the launch of the Switch Pro. The fact that they just hired an art director that worked on Halo, I'm like, oh, that's awesome. Then I'm like, wait, an art director? We're at the art direction phase?
Yeah, they really seem to be going at a snail's pace with this, and I can't say I blame them either. I don't know that there's really a whole lot of financial incentive. I like Samus a lot, but the first time that I was ever really able to play Samus was Smash 64. I played the original Metroid and got lost and wandered around for a couple hours and decided that I can't play that game. And then when Metroid Prime came out, I was like, oh yeah, finally I can play this character. I'm like, nope, no I can't.
I loved it. I absolutely loved Prime, but I know a lot of people, it was a very different experience from what they were expecting. But so I feel like with Metroid, it's one of these things where it's a prime example, no pun intended, of a game going from 2D to 3D flawlessly is Metroid Prime. It kept all of that amazing, just like isolation and getting lost in the maze and the gigantic map. Everything was there. It felt like a Metroid game, but a completely three-dimensional Metroid game. So I feel like they did a really good job with that.
Oh, yeah. Don't get me wrong. I'm really impressed with it. Even though the controls were too much of a barrier of entry for me personally, I enjoyed watching my brother play it. And I felt like the way that they had evolved this character from the original NES iteration to this 3D world, it was something that I respected, even if it wasn't something that really grabbed me personally.
Yeah. Well, I'd love to see Nintendo do something with it, like from a horror perspective. I want to see something new. I don't want to just see like Metroid Prime 3.5 or something like that. I want to see 4 be completely different. And they have a great dev team behind it. I mean, it went from, I can't remember who initially had the reins on Metroid Prime 4 before they scrapped the game.
I've never seen anything like that. That is the craziest thing to me.
They said it was like 50% done. Like, that, it blows my mind that they messed up so... Was it supposed to come out in 2018?
I don't know if they got to a point where they had announced a specific release date, but after a few years passing from the original splash screen at E3, people had to be getting the impression that the game was getting fairly far along.
Yeah, we haven't seen a single screenshot. Not anything.
Yeah. And how strange that Nintendo actually felt like they needed to shoot an explanation.
Yeah.
And deliver that to the people.
Well, I loved it. Like, yeah, this game sucked. we had to stop.
This game did not meet our quality standards. So even though we were like halfway done, we scrapped it and we put it in the hands of another company. That's just...
I got to figure out the company that originally did it. I feel like it was a decently large studio. But that being said, could you imagine getting a Metroid license? I wanted to say it, the F word, but messing it up so bad.
That would be soul crushing, wouldn't it?
Messing it up so bad that Nintendo's like, guess what? Not only did you lose the license, but we're going to publicly say how much your game sucked and give it back to Retro Studios, who's going to do a better job.
What an incredible amount of pressure it is to have one of Nintendo's big franchises. I know Metroid might be a little bit quieter, but that's like one of the original ones. It was born in the same year as Legend of Zelda. And even though it may not come with all the fanfare and acclaim as Mario and Zelda, it's a very well-known franchise. So for Nintendo to feel like, we got to start over again. I don't know how much they spend. Nintendo's super quiet about how much they spend on games, but they had to put a decent amount of money in if people were working full time on it for years and then to have nothing to show for it, that's crazy.
I'm telling you right now, it's going to launch with whatever the new Switch that's coming out, either the Switch 2 or the Switch Pro, which I guarantee you they're going to be announcing at E3 next year. It's going to come out just in time. It's going to come out just in time for the PS5 and the Xbox Scarlett. They need to compete.
I don't know. I think that they don't like to compete. I think that they like being released on off years. They did it with the Wii U. They did it again with the Switch. And it works well for them because since they're not really in direct competition with the other consoles, they don't want to compete for the other people's dollars.
If they could come out with a PS or a Switch Pro that was on par with a PS4, I feel like they would have just a plethora of ports that could potentially come to the Switch. And I feel like that's enough for them to compete. They don't need to directly compete anymore. And we talked about this at least at one other point before where graphics are not everything anymore.
Yeah.
But it would be nice to play. Like, I played Wolfenstein 2 on the Switch. And then I played it on the PS4. And I'm like, I can't play this game on the Switch anymore. I just can't. I love the game. But even playing it in handheld mode, it was, at points, I'm like, I don't know what I'm looking at. It looks like a Jackson Pollock painting.
Oh, wow.
At other points, it looked fantastic. But there was points just where there was it. The Switch tries to be a little bit more ambitious than it's truly capable of being at some points. And I give it a lot of credit that it can run a lot of those games. But give me a Switch Pro with some beefier hardware, 1080p, 60 frames a second. I don't even care about 4K. It doesn't have to be Xbox One X. It doesn't have to be PS4 Pro quality. Just give me something that can consistently run 1080p 60 frames a second, and I'll be right as rain.
Oh, like, I'm with you, too. I do think that they should wait until after Scorpio and PS... What number are they on now?
It's going to be five.
PS5? I think they should wait until at least 6 months so that they can have their time in the spotlight. Nintendo's not competing for dollars.
Yeah.
And then they can release solo, just like they've been. They like it that way. They like being the star of the show and not to be overshadowed by any other distractions.
Yeah.
And it's been working pretty well for them. I didn't with the Wii U, but lately they've had their act together, and the Switch and the Switch Lite doesn't really release. It releases in an open field, so people are free to decide whether they want it or not.
Still love it.
Instead of whether they want this or another console.
Yeah. I still love the Switch Lite. Good Lord, is that a good console?
I finally held it. I held it for the first time. Yeah. And I see what you're talking about. I wish that grittier, rough finish was on all of the Joy-Cons and the Switch.
It feels great as long as it doesn't drift, which it hasn't yet. But
it's strange
to me. I'm terrified it's going to because I can't just pop off the controller anymore.
Yeah, that is a shame. I got a few drifters. Those are the kids' controllers now.
Yeah. Oh, man, poor kids. It's an added bonus. It makes the game harder.
Yeah, it's hard mode for the kids.
Yeah.
They're a lot more adaptable than I am. I sometimes mess with my daughter on purpose where I'll give her a GameCube controller and then I'll give her two Joy-Cons and then I'll give her one Joy-Con all in the same game, to see how quickly she can adapt from the different play modes. And she doesn't even notice the difference. She does not even blink. And I'm like, wow, that is a skill I do not possess.
My daughter's a pro controller fan, and that's it.
Mm.
I know you're not too fond of the pro controller, but we're a pro controller family, darn it.
I wish that it was better. I really do. I'm a Power A wireless GameCube controller guy.
Power A loves you for that, man. They really do. I ended up just getting this. I'm going to be doing a video review on this. So PDP sent me over the Afterglow controller for review. So I'm curious. I heard a lot of good things about this one, too. So I'm going to try this one out, too. Quick plug for a video I'm going to be doing. But
nice.
PDP has been doing a lot of really cool controllers, too. So I'm super curious to see how that one feels. But yeah,
I can't get Amazon out here, so I have to find stuff physically. It makes it a little bit more
like
challenging.
It's like the Stone Age over there.
In some ways.
You gotta
talk
to people to buy things?
I can't even talk to people because it's a completely different language that I don't understand.
Just draw my picture.
That's what I've been doing. So I've been putting images on my phone and showing people, and they're like, they know exactly. Some people even talk into their phone,
yeah,
and then show me their phone, and it shows the translation of what they said.
Yeah, like, I think iOS has that built in now.
Yeah, that's impressive.
All you have to do is just say to your phone, I think it's just like translate this, and then we'll say what language.
Mm.
Yeah, it's crazy.
I'm gonna have to start trying that.
We are in a time where language barriers are nearly inconsequential. So
as
long as you have a phone, it's fascinating. But there we go. I think we actually covered all of our topics tonight.
Yeah.
I'm excited for Halloween. I'm excited for your episode of Custom Conquest coming tomorrow or today, depending on when you're watching this. If you're watching any segment on YouTube and you want to check it out, it's obviously right here on our YouTube channel. Otherwise, the podcast is either on Spotify or iTunes. I'm sure you're listening to it. So head over to YouTube.com/NintendoWire. Check out the podcast. Check out Custom Conquest. Check out the Wiretap. We're doing a lot over there right now. YouTube just yesterday they purged a bunch of our subscribers. I got notifications.
How big of a hit was that?
For a lot of people, they're like, I lost 1,000 subscribers and they have less than we do. We lost 20. So it wasn't a big
20
deal.
Subscribers?
We lost 20.
Yeah, I saw the notification like, hey, you're about to take a massive and notable hit. And I'm like, oh, we're so close to 100,000.
Yeah.
That's a shame. But 20, that's
I'm hoping
not too
that
bad.
Wasn't just like round one of their like purge. But we're very, very close. We're at like 96,200 right now.
That's
for,
exciting.
Subscribers.
Very close.
I still feel like it's going to happen by the end of the year. Because we have so much interesting content coming out too. Obviously, Custom Conquest being back has helped quite a bit. And then Tom Brown, the guy who does the D-makes, he has some interesting D-makes in the works too. So I'm excited to see what's going to happen
genius.
With the channel. He really is. We put a lot of work, all three of us, into putting out the content on this channel. So if you like what you're seeing, or even if you like what you're hearing and you want to head over to YouTube and help us reach that goal, that would mean a lot. But besides YouTube, TJ, where can we find you?
If you want to connect with me on Twitter, I'm at Custom Conquest.
All right. And my Twitter account is at AmiiboJason. I'm also the editor-in-chief over at NintendoWire.com, so you can find all of our content there. If you're more of a Twitter person for the news, we are at NinWire. I'm in the process of trying to get at NintendoWire. It's an uphill battle on that one. It's been suspended for like 10 years, and Twitter does not want to let that handle go, but maybe one day. You can find me over on Facebook too. We're at Nintendo Wire on Facebook. We have a Ring Fit Fitness Club over on Facebook that I'm trying to keep up with. There's so much stuff I'm doing at the moment. But if you're curious about like my Ring Fit challenge, I'm on day 13 of 60 right now. So I'm sure I'm going to keep going past day 60 too. It's a fun game.
But I was thinking about maybe filming some of my Ring Fit experience.
Oh, I already started. My
have
video
you put any videos out of it?
I did not yet, but I have a video review coming out.
I want to see that bad.
A lot of sites they did like 2 or 3 days of Ring Fit, and they did the review. My review is taking a bit longer because I want to give you guys an idea of exactly what can happen if you take this game seriously. So something I put on my Twitter account today was I've lost 5 pounds in 12 days of starting it, but I'm also running. Because it's inspired me to kind of just go and jog. And I'm not eating like a complete animal anymore. I'm trying to actually count my calories. So Ring Fit on its own is not going to do miracles. But I've always said this, even with Wii Fit, it gets you into a mindset that makes you want to be healthier. And it doesn't want you don't want to waste what you just did. You don't want to waste that hour that you just spent battling a buff dragon.
Yeah.
By eating 5 hamburgers and like a bunch of fries and, you know, a Coke. Like, you want to be able to say, yeah, I kicked that dragon's ass, and I gained something from it. So I'm working on it.
What you're saying is you're carving out your raging six-pack.
I wouldn't quite call it a six-pack, but it's no longer a keg.
You're customizing your body.
Oh, man, I like that. Custom Conquest After Dark.
You're going to be like supermodel Jason. You might even have to change your moniker.
I don't know about that. Amiibo are pretty sexy on
their
might, own.
They might make you Ring Fit Jason.
Oh, man. I don't know if I really don't know if I want to be associated with Ring Fit, but
if this show keeps carrying on the way that we've been carrying on, you're going to be Ring Fit Jason and I'm going to be Mario Kart Tour TJ.
I think so. I think that's probably a real possibility, to be honest. But all right, we will be back next week with another episode. Hopefully we have new topics for you. It's been, I just want to point this out before we go. When we decided we were going to do a podcast, we decided to do it in the biggest Nintendo drought there has been this year. Like, we're in a weird place where anything post E3, it just kind of drags. I mean, we had Link's Awakening, which was nice. We had Goose, Untitled Goose Game, which we had a lot of fun talking about. And Luigi's Mansion's coming out. But the news is trickling in as far as new stuff. So, I mean, we're getting to a point where there's not a lot of Smash content coming out, at least right now. There's no major gigantic game other than Animal Crossing that I think people are, like, losing their minds over. So hopefully we're going to get a Nintendo Direct by the time we record this again. I'm hearing rumors it might happen early next week, but
that would be exciting.
Who knows?
Well, in any event, it's just fun to chat Nintendo.
Oh, even if I will spend every minute chatting with you if I can. Like, just having these conversations is good enough for me. I don't care if Nintendo goes out of business. We're going to talk about something.
But that said, I think we're always open to listener feedback. So if there's something that people want to hear, that's something that we're definitely open to.
Except we're never going to stop talking about Ring Fit or Mario Kart Tour.
No, Mario Kart Tour is a staple of the show.
So just deal with that. You can deal with that. We're good to go. But until next time, guys, as I always say, stay wired in.
Thanks for playing.